Day after tomorrow, gentlemen, we'll be in Las Vegas.
Welcome to Vegas.
Las Vegas functions on a 24-hour-a-day schedule.
The pools, the casino.
Big volcano out in front.
That's the Eiffel Tower.
Bellagio.
Riviera.
The Mirage.
Flamingo.
Sahara.
The MGM Grand.
This isn't the real Caesar's Palace, is it?
I want a gamble.
They always put the machines that pay off the most right in the front.
Good luck.
Strip is just the most amazing stretch of road, I think, probably anywhere in the world.
Kicking ass in Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
Welcome to Las Vegas.
This is rather exciting. We get to do yet another installment of 360 Vintage Vegas, but at the same time, it's a little bit scary because this will be the first time that we're working with, the first time I'm working with GarageBand, and we've made the full Mac upgrade, but you've reassured me that I'm in good hands with it, with quality software here.
You sure are. I've been using, we've got a couple MacBook Pros in this, in our household, and I use a PC a lot as well, but I'm pretty well acquainted. I'm very satisfied with using a Mac whenever I'm on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been thrilled about about learning this thing. There is a bit of a learning curve, but it's you can kind of feel the raw power that this thing's got. You know, I've been working on a PC for all these episodes, and I'm really, really eager to get some audio laid down so I can, you know, not only edit but throw some enhancing in there and see what this thing can do.
Absolutely. I hope it feels good.
right now it feels good but uneasy. You know me, I'm a planner, I'm a practicer.
Yeah, and me, I'm more kind of a spur of the moment kind of guy.
You know.
Well, as Mark said, we've got our next installment in the 360 Vegas Vintage Vegas series, and we're extremely excited to bring another installment to you. It's been a little while since we released the El Rancho, and it is time for another one. So let's just jump right in. As long as businesses existed, there's been organized crime in one form or another. It's hard to argue that Prohibition helped to develop and fine-tune organized crime into what would become known as the Mafia. It has also helped to romanticize the notion of a collection of charismatic businessmen who operated outside of the law to provide a service and a product that people wanted. It also developed another belief that the police and the government were the bad guys, always trying to spoil everyone's good time.
Before we get into this feature, we want to clarify something. When we refer to the people in the mafia, the syndicate, organized crime, or any variation of that, we aren't accusing anybody of anything. We're referring to them as such because that's what they were most commonly believed to be affiliated with. We also want to make it clear that a large amount of this information is impossible to confirm. The research we've referenced to bring you this feature are the recollections, investigations, stories, allegations, and myths. Unfortunately, it's also the best collection of information available, or what we could find, to help tell the real stories regarding this period of time and the events and people involved in them. This is most likely how it went down. It all starts with Block 16 and 17. When William Clark was preparing to auction off the Las Vegas town site in 1905, he sectioned the land into blocks. When the town began to draw the city map in 1906, Block 16 and 17 were established as the only places to legally sell liquor and offer gambling. This designation quickly made them the clear choice for all manner of illegal activity, including prostitution, gambling, after it was made illegal in Nevada in 1909, and alcohol, when it became illegal in the 20s.
Yeah, Block 16 became the most infamous of these two parcels. Today, it's located behind and across the street from Binion's between 1st and 2nd and Ogden and Stewart Avenue. While officials did not approve of the activities going on at Block 16, they did very little to stop it. Violations were so flagrant that it was said that Prohibition only made it slightly more difficult for Block 16 to do business because they had to sell alcohol in secret.
Now, the most notorious saloon in Vegas was the Arizona Club, known as the Queen of Block 16, and famous for its slow gin fizz. The Arizona Club originally opened as a tent saloon in 1905. By 1906, it was remodeled into the two-story property that it's most commonly remembered as. At the Arizona Club, you could get all manner of illegal vice all in one stop. The second story was most commonly remembered for its brothel.
Yeah, the property was so popular that within 2 years, the Arizona Club expanded again, adding a third floor. The design of the building's frontage became so iconic that in 1942, after the property closed, it was moved to the Last Frontier Casino on the Strip and was used until the late 50s.
The Arizona Club was also the first gaming property in Vegas to actively promote itself. Eventually, Nevada re-legalized gambling in 1931, and the 18th Amendment was repealed in 1933, but prostitution still continued unchecked.
However, in 1941, the U.S. Army built the Air Corps Gunnery School, now known as the Nellis Air Force Base. The Army informed the city's administration that they would make the city of Las Vegas off-limits to all personnel if prostitution continued on Block 16. Nevada had ignored prostitution on Block 16 for so long because it attracted business. Now, since it would prevent it, city officials could no longer ignore the issue.
Block 16 was raided on December 2nd, 1941, and 22 women were arrested on prostitution charges. However, most posted bail when the brothels reopened. Raids and releases continued for several weeks until the city decided to revoke the liquor and slot licenses for all saloons on Block 16. Without the steady cash flow of the two, the saloons and brothels all closed up. The Arizona Club closed in 1942, and eventually Block 16 was declared hazardous and demolished. It was later paved over and became parking spots. Today, it's home to Binion's Parking Garage.
The first guy we want to talk about is Tony Cornero.
Yeah, Tony wasn't a mafia guy per se. He was more of an independent entrepreneur of illegal activities. He ran in the same circles, but didn't really report to anyone, nor did he step on anyone's toes. During Prohibition, Tony made a lot of money smuggling whiskey from Canada and rum from Mexico and selling them to speakeasies in Southern California. By the time Tony turned 25 in 1927, he had made $1 million.
Yeah, and that $1 million equates to about $12.3 million in 2011 standards.
Yeah, Tony eventually got caught and in 1929 spent some time in jail. While in jail, Tony learned that Nevada was about to legalize gambling again.
Yeah, Boulder Dam was about to begin construction, and the U.S. government was concerned about the social element, so they informed the city of Boulder that there was to be no gambling and no prostitution. This helped to consolidate both into Las Vegas.
When Tony got out of prison in 1931, he got together with his two brothers and came up with a plan. 3.3 miles down the street, on the corner of Fremont and Charleston Boulevard, a parcel of land was available that would locate their club next to the newly paved Boulder Highway. It would also make their casino the first resort the workers would see coming into town from the Boulder Dam project. So Tony purchased 30 acres for $1 an acre. On April 1st, 1931, the Meadows was licensed to have two craps, two roulette, two blackjack, two poker tables, a big six wheel, and five slot machines. On May 2nd, 1931, the Meadows Club and Casino opened, and it brought customers from all over town.
The property was named after the Spanish translation for Las Vegas, which means the Meadows. The Meadows cost $31,000 to build and had a first-class 30-room hotel and a top-notch casino with a great restaurant and bar. They even built a landing strip to make it easier to bring in movie stars.
Many consider the Meadows to be the forerunner of the modern casinos that would be built in the 1940s. 15 years before Bugsy was given credit for a carpet joint, Tony Cornero opened the Meadows. Local business and civic leaders referred to the Meadows as America's most luxurious casino.
Amenities were advertised as rooms, quote, all with bath, end quote, hot water available at all hours and electric lights. People would get all dressed up and come out for an evening at the Meadows. Tony hired Broadway producer Jack Laughlin for $500 a week to create the Meadows Review, and it sold out nightly. And the booze was top-notch, especially compared to the local liquor being served downtown.
The property was doing great, but 3 years into the Great Depression, things were getting worse and not showing signs of improving.
Now, the Great Depression started in 1929 and continued to get worse until it peaked in 1934 and 35. After peaking, it would take another 5 years for the economy to recover. Also, in 1931, Prohibition was still in effect and would be for another 2 years. Prohibition lasted from January 16, 1920, with the 18th Amendment to the Constitution until December 5th of 1933, when the 21st Amendment repealed it.
Facing all these problems, 2 months after the Meadows opened, Tony and his brothers sold the hotel, but continued to run the casino.
Yeah, one of the problems they had was keeping the rooms at the hotel full. People who gambled, partied, and drank at the Meadows drove home when they were done.
3 months later, a fire burned the hotel to the ground. Now, the fire is believed to be the work of arson. It's also believed that the fire was intended to burn down the casino and not the hotel. Some say the fire was set by the New York Mafia because Cornero refused to give them a cut of the action. Minus a hotel, Tony and his brothers continued to run the casino until early 1932 when they decided to close the Meadows and move back to California. This was not the last time Tony Cornero would operate a casino in Las Vegas. The 21st Amendment of the U.S. Constitution put an end to Tony's booze smuggling business in 1933. Despite being the worst parts of the Great Depression, Los Angeles still had many wealthy movie stars and residents with disposable income. L.A. had several gambling clubs at the time, but they were frequently being raided, and wealthy patrons didn't want their name in the papers associated with that. Looking for a way around this problem, the idea of the infamous gambling ships was born.
Yeah, L.A. authorities' jurisdiction only extended 3 miles off the California coast. At that point, it was international waters. It's believed that the Chicago mob originally bankrolled a fleet. Johnny Roselli was their point man. He worked with Jack Dragna, who was considered the head of the L.A. Mafia at the time, just to keep relationships friendly between the two organizations. Tony Cornero was welcomed in as another partner and a respected entrepreneur in the mob community.
As early as 1936, the SS Monte Carlo, SS Tango, and SS Texas set up shop 3.1 miles off the California coast. For 25 cents, a water taxi would pick you up from Santa Monica Harbor, and in 10 to 30 minutes, you'd be on a luxury cruise to nowhere. In the beginning, it's estimated that these gambling ships made as much as $100,000 to $200,000 per month.
Yeah, an interesting side story. In 1937, the SS Monte Carlo was anchored 3 miles off the shore of San Diego. During a storm on New Year's Day, the ship broke free from its anchor and drifted to the shore, eventually landing on the beach. Despite the value of the gambling ship at the time, no one claimed ownership because once on shore, the gambling ship was illegal. What is left of the SS Monte Carlo is still there today, on shore of the El Camino Towers of the Coronado Shores condos. The ship is usually underwater, but it can be seen during low tide. It's actually speculated that $150,000 worth of silver dollars may still be in the slot machines today.
Once the New York Mafia learned how lucrative the gambling ship operation was in California, they wanted a piece of it too. Meyer Lansky decided to send Bugsy Siegel to L.A. to expand their racing wire service as well as get a piece of the gambling action.
Yeah, this is the reason Bugsy was in California in the first place when the Flamingo opportunity presented itself.
Tony and Bugsy quickly developed a working relationship, and Tony was more than happy to expand the business with New York backing him. In 1938, the SS Rex, the most famous gambling ship, was added to the fleet.
Yeah, the SS Rex opened on May 5th. It was billed as the world's largest, most luxurious casino. The cost invested in the SS Rex isn't clear, but reports are between $250,000 and $600,000. From the outside, it didn't look like much. However, it could accommodate 2,000 gamblers, carried a crew of 350, including waitstaff, chefs, a full orchestra, a squad of gunmen, and a dining room that served first-class French cuisine. It was estimated that the SS Rex made $300,000 a night after expenses.
However, with Bugsy in town, trouble began to brew.
Bugsy wasn't liked by either Jack Dragna or Johnny Roselli, and neither were big fans of New York coming in and taking a piece of the action. Blaming Tony for bringing Bugsy and New York into their operation, Jack Dragna put a hit out on Tony. Before that order could be carried out, all of the casino ships had bigger problems to deal with.
Attorney General of California Earl Warren pledged to shut down the gambling boats. Warren and the state of California figured out a way to change the way the 3 mile limit was measured. They moved the starting point to the coastline. This means the ships were now in California waters and illegal. Warren, the LAPD, and the Coast Guard made their way to the gambling ships intending to shut them down and arrest those in attendance. However, Tony wouldn't allow any of the cops on the ship. Not wanting to get into a gunfight, Tony ordered his crew to use high-powered water hoses to keep Warren and the police from boarding the ship. This went on for 3 days. Eventually, Cornero surrendered, but not without taking a shot at him.
We hope you've enjoyed this premium content preview. For access to the rest of this episode, as well as all the premium content we offer, go to patreon.com/360Vegas. A monthly subscription will give you access to explicit, commercial-free podcasts, including The Weekly Show, 360 Vegas Reviews, exclusive podcasts like 360 Vintage Vegas, 360 Origins, 360 Vegas Movies, insider information on all things 360 Vegas, 360 Vegas Vacation, and early access to everything. To subscribe, simply go to patreon.com/360Vegas. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Or you can find a link to Patreon on our blog, 360VegasPodcast.com.